objective insights on the important topical issues of our day.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z, and we're here every week with great information about health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. And you can always get more information about our events and talks and walks and all kinds of things coming up for the summer at naturalnurse.com and drznaturally.com. Again, this is Dr. Z and The Natural Nurse, and we're really happy that you are here. And so we have Dr. Rudrani Banik as our guest today, and she's a board-certified ophthalmologist, and she specializes in integrative approaches to vision health, and she's the author of a book called The Macular Degeneration Prevention Protocol, and she's a fellowship-trained neuro-ophthalmologist and founder of Envision Health New York City. So we're really glad that she can join us to talk a little bit about the health of the eyes. Dr. Banik, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much, Dr. Z, and good morning to both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, I always think that we take our eyes, we take our eyes for granted, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. And such an important vision. If you take away vision, you know, we can get around in life, but it's very difficult. What percentage of our world is vision? Did you ever think about that with your patients, how important it is?
Yeah, well, I think about it all the time, and I couldn't have said it better myself. Most of us take our vision for granted. We just assume we can see, and it's so vital for so many of our activities. For example, reading, driving, working on a device, seeing the faces of our loved ones. But you know, when our vision is taken away from us, it can be so devastating. And yes, we have our other senses, but you know, we really become limited in what we can do. And so, you know, my goal, really my mission, and I tell my patients this, is to try to teach them how to protect and preserve their vision, because there are so many natural ways to protect our vision, you know, our precious eyesight. We only have two eyes, and we have to keep them going for our whole lifetime. So we really need to be proactive about our vision health.
Can you give us a little bit of an anatomy lesson about our eyes and actually how we see? Because I think that's important, and that'll lead us into talking about what you want to talk about, macular degeneration.
Yeah, that's a great question. So many people aren't familiar with the eye because it is a complex organ. You know, it's very small. It's about the size of a golf ball, but it has about 40 different parts, or at least 40 different parts, that all work together in concert to give us our vision. And I like to give an analogy of the eye as like a camera. And so the eye lets light in. So there's the front of the eye, which is the cornea. It's the curved surface on the front of the eye. It lets light in, and then that light goes through the pupil, which is like the aperture of a camera. And then the lens sits behind the pupil, and it's similar to the lens of a camera. It helps to focus that light, those light beams, onto the retina, when the retina is in the back of the eye. And the retina is analogous to the film of the camera. If you think of not digital cameras, but old-style cameras. The retina is the film, and it captures those light images, and then it sends that image through the optic nerve to the brain. And so it's very interesting. We don't see with our eyes. We actually see with our brain. And so that light, all those impulses get transmitted. The light impulses get transmitted into electrical energy that goes through the optic nerve to be processed by the brain. And the brain is what allows us to see shape, form, color, movement, and it also integrates our visual information with everything else. So, for example, our motor system, our balance system, our language, you know, how we read, for example. So the brain is what integrates everything. So the brain is kind of, it's really interesting. 30% of the brain is dedicated to our vision and vision processing. So it's a tremendous amount that comes, you know, not just from eyesight, but everything else that gets integrated, all that information.
So you were saying about this macula, that it's an area where all the images are focused at a part of the eye that's responsible for finer vision. And you, I guess you, in your questions that you sent me, macular degeneration is the leading cause of severe visual loss in people 55 and older. And I guess maybe next to cataracts, it's sort of the old age kind of eye thing, although I guess we're maybe seeing it in younger people. Tell us a little bit about why this is a major cause of eye problems as people age.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Macular degeneration is one of the leading causes of vision loss and blindness, not only in the U.S., but in the world. It's one of the four top leading causes of vision loss. So along with cataract, glaucoma, and diabetic retinopathy, those are the top four. And so what macular degeneration is it's a degenerative disease of the center part of the retina. Now, I mentioned before the retina is like the film in the back of our eyes, the camera. And so in the center part, which is called the macula, what happens is there are waste products that begin to deposit there. And these waste products develop because of chronic oxidative stress. So oxidative damage to the retina is one of the root causes of macular degeneration. And it does tend to happen more so in older people. The older one is, the higher the risk of macular degeneration. So it tends to affect people who are in their 70s, 80s, sometimes as early as their 50s and 60s. And there are other variants of macular degeneration that can happen when people are even younger. For example, there's a specific form that can happen even in one's 20s, but that's pretty rare. But in terms of what happens, so people can lose their central eyesight, so their central vision, which again can be very, very devastating. They may still be able to see in the periphery, but imagine having a dark spot or a gray spot right in the center of your vision, and there's no way you can see around it even. And so it's very difficult to, again, read, drive, do our normal activities because of this. And one of the root causes is oxidative damage. Another root cause is mitochondrial dysfunction. And mitochondria are the energy powerhouses of our cells. And when our cells can't process and produce energy properly, that leads to, the sequence of events that leads to vision loss. And then the third root cause of macular degeneration is inflammation. So inflammation plays a key role. And I like to think of macular degeneration as almost similar to a leaky eye syndrome. You know, many of us have probably heard of leaky gut or even leaky heart or leaky brain. Well, macular degeneration is a leaky eye syndrome where inflammation in the back of the eye, in the retina, leads to new blood vessels forming and bleeding. And that's what actually causes the vision loss is the blood that develops, blood and fluid and protein that develops in the back of the eye that leads to central vision loss.
Why do the vessels bleed? I guess that would be the wet type of, there's two types, the wet and the dry macular degeneration, as far as I remember. This is Eye Health 101, so you can help me out there. But you have one type where you said it's a oxidative damage. So maybe let's talk a little bit about antioxidants and things that, what that means. And then the other one is actually where you get blood vessels that grow and then they leak. Now, why on earth would our body and its intelligence, you know, our vis, the power, the healing power of nature, why would we make new blood vessels in an area? Maybe there's a hypoxic, you know, it's sensing hypoxia or something. Have you thought about like the mechanisms as to why the body's compensating to do these things?
Yes. So I'll just explain what you were alluding to earlier. There are two types of macular degeneration. There's dry and there's wet. And the majority of people have the dry form, which is simply it's having the waste deposits that I was talking about. These waste deposits are called drusen, and they deposit in the center of the retina. And the dry form progresses to the wet form. So one doesn't just get the wet form from the onset. It is a progression from the dry form to the wet form. And there are different stages of macular degeneration. So there's early, intermediate, and advanced. And in early macular degeneration, you only get the dry drusen deposits. And so many people actually don't have any symptoms when they have the dry form. But when it progresses and it becomes intermediate and then wet, basically what's happening is the deposits begin to cause inflammation. The inflammation causes a particular compound called VEGF, which is vascular endothelial growth factor, to be released. And I think you're in a sense, you're correct. There is a sense that the retina is not getting enough nutrition, not enough oxygen, and it leads to these new blood vessels forming. And the issue is these blood vessels are not normal. They are very fragile, they're very thin, and they bleed easily. And so these blood vessels kind of creep up underneath the retina and then into the retina. When they bleed is when people experience severe vision loss. And fortunately, only 10% of people have the wet form of macular degeneration. So it's not as common, but certainly the dry form, the risk is there that it can progress into the wet form.
Thank you. That was really spectacular to kind of bring it down into some things that folks will understand there. So what are some things that folks can do about it? I mean, I think that absorption and diet is, of course, diet first and maybe absorption even more important, is very critical. The things that I know of as a naturopathic physician that seem to reverse these things, we should be getting in our diet regularly, but maybe sometimes we don't absorb it, or maybe we don't get enough of these things. So maybe let's talk about what you've seen in your practice help people from a nutritional viewpoint.
Yes, absolutely. So as I mentioned earlier, the first root cause of macular degeneration, there are three, again, oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, and inflammation. The first one is oxidative stress. So our retina is constantly being bombarded by all kinds of potential oxidative stressors. So for example, light, UV light, blue light comes in and it can potentially damage our retinas. Then there are toxins in the environment. And for example, smoking is one of the leading risk factors for macular degeneration. And through smoking, many, many different toxins are released, and these can damage the retina. And then also a diet that is low in antioxidants is also linked to macular degeneration. So oxidative stress is, again, one of the first dominoes to fall, if you will, when it comes to vision loss and macular degeneration. What we can do to protect against this, and this is really what my book is based on, how we can prevent macular degeneration, is to make sure that we provide our retina with the nutrients that it needs, the antioxidants that it needs to fight against all these different types of oxidative stress. So again, light damage, toxins, and again, just low levels of antioxidants and some of those antioxidant enzymes as well. You want to boost all of that. And so the foods that are richest in these antioxidants are typically fruits and vegetables. And there are specific antioxidants in the retina, protective pigments called the macular carotenoids. And, you know, we've all heard of carrots being good for our eyes, and it's the form of vitamin A in carrots that are great for the retina. But there are more powerful nutrients that are located in the retina that help absorb some of the light rays, help to neutralize some of those rays that are really important. And these include lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin. Now, these are, again, pigments that are in the retina. They're forms of carotenoids, so relatives of vitamin A, but not exactly. And these pigments are found highest in many fruits and vegetables that are, for example, green leafy fruits and vegetables. So or vegetables, I should say, spinach, kale, broccoli, collard greens, even corn is rich in lutein and zeaxanthin, and yellow peppers, orange peppers. These are all wonderful sources of some of these pigments. Now, those are those types of fruits and vegetables provide the lutein and zeaxanthin, but the third pigment I mentioned, mesozeaxanthin, is not readily found in fruits and vegetables. Unfortunately, it's not commonly found in foods at all. So this is where the second part of prevention against macular degeneration is really important, which is supplementation. And even with the best of diets, you know, if, for example, if one is having plenty of these fruits and vegetables, it's hard to get enough of these pigments through our diet alone. So we need about 6 milligrams of, at least 6 milligrams of lutein in our diet and at least 1 to 2 milligrams of zeaxanthin. And many of us fall short of that. Many of us are getting only 1 or 2 milligrams of lutein and less than 1 milligram of zeaxanthin in our diet. So again, that's why supplementation is so important. And there are some great supplements out there, but one particular ingredient I found that's found in a lot of the supplements is called Lutamax 2020. And this particular ingredient has lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin, all three of the vital pigments for our eyes. And these pigments are found in the same ratio as found in the natural diet, which is a 5-to-1 ratio. So this ingredient, Lutamax 2020, is available in many of the supplements on the market. So you can, again, buy a variety of different eye health supplements, but look for that that ingredient, which will provide you with what your eyes need to protect against macular degeneration, but also other toxins in the environment. For example, blue light damage. Many of us are on our screens for hours at a time now, especially during the pandemic. So it will also help prevent against blue light and digital eye strain.
So blue light, I mean, that's part of the spectrum of light. So why? I would think that as we get higher from the red, orange, yellow light up to indigo and violet, the frequency goes up, as I remember from physics, and that those are very penetrating and very disruptive as far as it's like the difference between AM radio and FM radio type of deal with frequency, and it's those higher frequencies that tend to do more damage, I would assume. Same thing with UV light, the one that penetrates seems to be a problem. Can you talk a little bit about that and then why computers give off those things?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. You actually gave a wonderful explanation. So think of light as a spectrum. So there are short wavelengths and high wavelengths, and some of the light we can see and some of it we can't see. So on the shorter end of the spectrum is UV light. So UV A, B, and C, which comes from the sun. And it is important to get some of those UV rays, but also we don't want to get too much because they are very powerful and they can cause oxidative damage. So in terms of that, I do recommend that people wear sunglasses much of the time when they're outdoors or a wide-brimmed hat to protect our eyes against those light rays. They're short wavelength, high energy rays, but we can't see those rays. Now, the next set of light rays is the visible spectrum. So the colors of the rainbow, as you described, all the way from violet all the way to red. And so blue light is on the shorter end of the spectrum. It's between 400 to 500 nanometers. And the shorter end of that is 400 to 450. And most of the blue light that we get actually comes naturally from the sun. And this blue light is important because it helps to regulate our sleep-wake cycle or our circadian rhythms. It's very important. We need natural blue light exposure for that reason. But now with our current society, with our dependence on digital devices and also the types of light bulbs that we have in our homes, these are artificial sources of blue light. So, for example, any screen, a computer screen, a smartphone, a tablet, even our television screen emits blue light within that. It's a slightly longer wavelength. It's usually between 460 to 475 is the wavelength that's emitted from these artificial devices. And even the lights that we now use in our homes, the energy-saving lights, for example, compact fluorescent lights, CFL lights, even LED lights, emit a tremendous amount of blue light, much more than regular fluorescent bulbs or the old-style incandescent bulbs. So our eyes are being bombarded by this artificial blue light. And this blue light has been associated with issues with sleep, for example, difficulty falling asleep, especially if we get too much blue light exposure towards the evening, 2 hours before bedtime. It also has been associated with digital eye strain, which is a syndrome of blurry vision, trouble focusing, dry eyes, light sensitivity, sometimes even headaches, neck and shoulder pain. So this syndrome is associated with too much blue light exposure, again, artificial blue light exposure. So the best ways to protect against all of that is to, yes, you can turn your devices down, you know, kind of power down 2 hours before bed, try to avoid blue light exposure. Perhaps a lot of people ask me, should I be getting blue blocking glasses or blue light filter on my screen? Yes, you can do all of that. But really the best way to protect against blue light is to provide your eyes with the pigments to naturally absorb those blue light rays, which are, again, lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin. Number one, try to get it from your foods. And then secondly, from supplementation with Ludamax 2020. So those are simple, easy ways you can protect your eyes against all of this blue light that we're exposed to.
I was reading in an article in Life Extension magazine about some other ones that they've discovered, like saffron is being touted as something very important for the eyes, and marigold extracts. And so there's kind of unusual and probably excellent botanical sources of different pigments that probably ancient people ate, but we probably don't eat too much of those. I can't remember the last time I had a marigold, although probably at one of my herb workshops with Dr. Kamai. So it's interesting that I guess if your diet's more rainbowish and you have good absorption, there's a good sense of that. But I guess supplements are very concentrated, so that's really important, particularly if you're kind of a longer down the road of illness, you know. You know, I got to admit, a couple of years ago, my eyes were fine. I did not need glasses. And then all of a sudden, like, I bought a new computer, and I was doing all kinds of work, including my taxes and other things on my screen. And that summer, I developed that syndrome you mentioned with the blue light, where my eyes became blurry. And ever since then, I really, my eyes have not been as good as they used to. So, you know, I really felt that dramatically. And I could go right to a point in time when that happened. And it was because, I think, the blue light.
Yeah, so you're not alone. Many people experience this, and even children. So now that many of our kids have been homeschooling with the pandemic, they're on screens for hours at a time also. Before the pandemic, it was estimated that kids are on screens about 6 hours a day and adults about 11 hours a day. So those numbers are truly going to skyrocket now that we're even, you know, more dependent on our devices. So, those symptoms are so prevalent. I mean, I think it's really an epidemic that we're dealing with, an epidemic of this digital eye strain. And, it's interesting you were mentioning earlier about marigolds. So the extract from marigold actually has high amounts of lutein and zeaxanthin, and marigold is what is used to make the Ludamax 2020 I was mentioning to you earlier. So it's actually, marigold extract is a wonderful source of lutein and zeaxanthin in these supplements. And so, yes, absolutely. Going back to botanicals, ancient medicine is really what's being used now to help protect our eyes. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And also saffron, there are some clinical trials using saffron for macular degeneration. So the results haven't been published yet, but absolutely. Another wonderful herb that's being investigated is ginkgo biloba as well. And then some of the other bioflavonoids, like, for example, anthocyanins, which are found in berries, these are also being touted for protection for eye health. So, there are many wonderful natural products, fruits and vegetables, yes, but other botanical compounds as well, which provide great nutrients for our eyes and antioxidants.
Yeah, and I guess as we age, sometimes our absorption goes down, particularly of some people have trouble absorbing fat. And a lot of these pigments you've been mentioning are fat soluble. It's really important for patients to understand. And sometimes you know, people have compromised absorption. You know, we always look at that as one of the leading causes of illness as we get older. It's not just that, you know, people have good intentions to eat well, possibly, but their absorption goes down. I think hydrochloric acid in the stomach and a lot of the biliary system maybe is clogged with sludge or gallstones, and all that's needed to really absorb lots of the fat-soluble nutrients. So we might have good intentions in eating well. A lot of patients, they do. They come in and, you know, I look at their diet diary and it's spectacular. But then I measure them doing different, you know, functional medicine testing and things like that. And I find that their nutritional state is very low. And they scratch their head. They're a little disappointed and say, but I'm eating all these things and I'm even taking some supplements. And I'm saying, well, you know, you got to go back to naturopathic medicine 101. You are what you mm-hmm. absorb is the great aphorism that, I don't know, one wise holistic healer said many, many eons ago. You are what you absorb. So, we have to work on that. So,
and I'm glad I brought up.
We're going to take a quick break, Doc. We're going to take break, Dr. Banik, and play one of our natural medicine chess. When we return, I want to talk a little bit more about some other eye illnesses. While we have you on, and such a wealth of knowledge about the eyes, we should talk about some other eye things, cataracts and things like that, and talk more about these supplements that seem to help the eyes. So stay with us, folks, when we return.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
And great, we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We're really excited to have Dr. Bannick here, a board-certified ophthalmologist who specializes in more integrative approaches to vision health and is the author of Macular Degeneration Prevention Protocol. And she does all kinds of things as far as practicing, is on different boards and writing standards for and keeping our most precious asset, our eyes, healthy. So we really appreciate it, Doctor, coming on the air. So let's talk a little bit about more about the eyes and what we can do to. So what should people do as far as how long should they be on the device before they take a rest, Doctor?
Yeah, so my typical recommendation is to use something called the 20/20 rule. Now, 20/20 in vision terms usually means perfect vision, and most of us strive to have 20/20 vision. So the 20/20 rule is basically every 20 minutes, set your timer or your watch, every 20 minutes, take a 20-second break. And I tell patients just close your eyes. By simply closing your eyes, you will lubricate your eyes, which is a part of digital eye strain, why people get digital eye strain, but also it will prevent that blue light from getting in, from causing that you know, light sensitivity and possibly headache. So close your eyes for 20 seconds, and while you're doing that, take some deep breaths and almost make it like a mini meditation during those 20 seconds. And just do that repeatedly while you're working, and that will really improve your endurance when you're on a screen, you know, again, for hours at a time, which many of us have to do now that we're working from home or, you know, learning from home. So quick and simple rule, 20/20.
Is there a problem with people's tears? Like I heard that the tears are made out of part salt water, part almost like a glycoprotein, almost like a slippery thing, like slippery elm tea, and then part fat that's made by the meibomian glands. And then there's some problems with people's tears. It's kind of interesting that the engineer played jojoba oil, which is a great thing for helping with the tears because of its powerful lubrication property. I've actually used jojoba oil in my eye and ghee and some other old Ayurvedic tricks to really help with lubrication. But some people, they have this, where their eyes get very dry. Maybe it's allergies. Maybe they live in an arid climate. Maybe there's a lot of screen time. Is there anything that people can do if their tears are very dry or not lubricating their eyes too well?
Yeah, absolutely. So you gave a great description. So our tears are actually, they have three different layers. We have a bottom mucin layer that is more mucousy, and then it has glycoproteins in it, and it helps the tear film to stay on the surface of the eye. And then we have the middle part, which is an aqueous layer, which is actually what is lubricating. And then the top part is an oily layer, and that helps the tears, prevents them from evaporating. And that oily layer is really, really critical for having a healthy tear film and prevention of dry eye. There are many studies that have shown that a diet which is rich in omega-3 fats, for example, a diet rich in fish oil or chia seeds, flax seeds, high omega-3s from diet are associated with less dry eye. Now, you could also take a supplement, but the studies there are a little bit more ambiguous in terms of the benefit of a supplement. So it's always best to get it from your diet. And then the glands, which I'm glad you mentioned these, because many people don't realize that we have tiny little glands in our eyelids called meibomian glands. And these glands secrete these oils, and sometimes the glands get clogged and they get plugged up, or they can even get infected. And that can cause dysfunction of the tear film and lead to dry eye. So it's a syndrome called meibomian gland dysfunction. And it's really important, again, to have healthy omega-3s in your diet. And in terms of a natural product. I'm not, you know, familiar with jojoba for dry eye, but the most important thing is you want to make sure that whatever you're using for your eyes is pH balanced to your eye. So it shouldn't sting, it shouldn't burn when you put it in. So just be careful with that. But one product that's been shown to really be helpful is tea tree oil. And again, a natural product. You do have to dilute it, though, so you can't put it directly on your eyes or on your eyelids. But tea tree oil, diluted to about 5%, has been shown to help improve the ocular surface, to help improve meibomian gland function. And also, many people don't realize that the eye has a microbiome. So just as though our gut has a microbiome and our other organs have microbiomes as well, for example, our lungs have a microbiome, our skin has a microbiome, our eyes have a microbiome. There are healthy organisms that live on the surface of the eye, not inside the eye, but on the surface of the eye, that also are important for prevention of dry eye. And the tea tree oil helps to promote a healthy ocular surface microbiome. So it's pretty incredible that the natural product can really help promote healthy bacteria growing on the eye, on the surface of the eye, the eyelids and the conjunctiva and cornea, which is really, you know, a beautiful thing.
Well, maybe one day we'll have kind of concierge probiotics for the eye to do like an eye rinse type of thing. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea. Yeah, it hasn't been developed yet, but that is probably in the works somewhere, which is,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. A probiotic drop for the eyes, for example. That would be amazing if we had something like that.
What about some other eye things that people complain about coming in the office? I would think, other syndromes, dry and allergy eyes, could be simultaneously or interchanged because that can cause a lot of dryness with the pollen. You know, it's been kind of dry lately. We've had beautiful weather this spring here in the Northeast. I'm not sure where you're coming from, pollen from, but yeah, it's been a lot of pollen and dryness. So people have allergy eyes. Is there any tip that people can have to help their eyes with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually talk about this a lot on my social media because so many people come in with itchy, burny eyes and red eyes and so forth, especially children this time of year. So there are some just natural remedies I would recommend for allergy and dry eye related to the seasons. So the first thing is you want to decrease your allergen exposure. So when you're outdoors, make sure you're wearing wraparound sunglasses. That will help prevent some of the pollen from getting in your eyes. Also, when you do get home, you can do some cool compresses that will help to decrease, the puffiness or the swelling that a lot of people get. It's very soothing. If you would like, you can rinse out your eyes with a saline wash. You want to, again, just decrease your allergen count, the pollen count. It's also really important that when you're indoors to keep the windows closed and to use an air purifier, just to remove some of those, those fine particles in the air. And if you've been outdoors, when you do come back inside, make sure to just change your clothes, especially if you're very prone to getting eye allergies. Change your clothes and make sure to wash your face and perhaps take a bath at night or shower at night to, again, decrease that pollen load. And change your pillowcase often, because that will help as well. Then there are lots of over-the-counter drops that are available for allergy. You can use, there are many drops with ingredients like antihistamines, ketotifen. There's a slew of different brands out there that are wonderful. And then also, it's also good to use lubricating drops along with the allergy drops. So there are many lubricating drops on the market. I would just make sure, just a word of caution, if you're looking for a lubricating drop, it's called artificial tears. If you're looking for an artificial tear drop, make sure to buy something that does not have the ingredient polyvinyl alcohol. So if you see anything with alcohol in the ingredients, do not purchase that because it's a relatively inexpensive ingredient that is used in a lot of the generic drops. It is toxic to the surface of the eye. So this is very unfortunate that they're allowing this toxic substance to be used in a generic drop, but it is commonly used. So just avoid that polyvinyl alcohol. And you'll do your eyes a lot of good. So there are many other brands out there like Refresh or Systane or Genteel. They're all excellent. So find a brand that works well for you. And you can use the lubricating drops pretty frequently. You can use them 3 or 4 times a day, sometimes even more, especially if you're at the computer and your eyes are really drying out. And the allergy drops are typically just once or twice a day. So I wouldn't overdo it on the allergy drops, but the lubricating drops you can use often.
Huh. Okay. That's a good suggestion. So we talked about a lot. I also like, you said cool compresses for allergies and when they're all inflamed to express the meibomian gland to get them unclogged. You could use warm compresses too. So that sometimes
yes.
helps as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So warm compresses are best for meibomian gland dysfunction. And again, the goal of the warm compress is to open up those glands to get them secreting oils well and, to unplug them. And when they do get plugged and infected, basically people can develop a sty or a chalazion. And so you want to keep your glands open. I actually, in my office, just to really get to the root cause of the problem, I actually image the meibomian glands. I have an infrared camera that can image them, and I can see what the structure is. I can see if the glands are clogged. I can see if the glands are degenerating or atrophying, if the glands have been lost. So I go a few steps further in terms of evaluation of dry eye and meibomian gland dysfunction. And if someone does have significant dysfunction, if the basic treatments aren't working, like the omega-3s and the warm compresses and the drops, if that's not working for dry eye, I do recommend a treatment to unplug the glands. And this treatment is called LipiFlow. It uses thermal pulsation, so high heat to about 104 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's very, very warm. It's not going to burn your skin, but it's very warm. That heat, again, helps to open up the glands, to unclog the glands. And then there's a very gentle pulsation that is then applied to basically excrete all of that blockage, all that clogged, the oils that are in there to eliminate that. And then it really resets the glands. And it's a wonderful treatment. I actually had meibomian gland dysfunction myself, especially around the time when I was pregnant. So I had this treatment done, and it's really done wonders in terms of improving my dry eye and improving my oil secretion. So I would suggest that if someone has had chronic issues with dry eye.
I've used, it's funny, because I in thinking about it, I was like, wow, this is very similar to having acne, where the gland is like gets clogged by some more saturated oil. So I'm thinking, how do we treat acne? Well, I know there's a lot of research on zinc. Zinc plays a huge role in the metabolism of the body and particularly the skin too, and vitamin A, which is an issue. So upon using more of the warm compresses with the vitamin A and the zinc, and then also changing their diet. So I got them off of fried and grilled foods and animal fats and processed foods, which tend to have a higher, they're not only pro-inflammatory, but they change the sebaceous, the types of oils in our sebum, makes them more saturated. Between all that, it seemed to help with a couple of patients. So just passing on some interesting treatment protocols. So that's cool.
I'm glad you brought that up. So, I try to tell my patients to think about the oils that you're cooking with also. If you are cooking with oils that are pro-inflammatory, for example, omega-6 based, switch over to an oil that's more of an omega-3 or healthy fat. So I love cooking with olive oil or avocado oil or even grapeseed oil, just to provide some more healthy fats rather than some of those pro-inflammatory fats. And I've really been able to turn some people around with diet alone. So, the power of what you're eating is just so tremendous when it comes to eye health. We talked about macular degeneration before, eating, those pro those protective foods, the powerful antioxidants, the omega-3s are important. But it's also important for another condition, which is cataract. And cataract is something that happens to everyone. And I tell people, you know, if you live long enough, you will get a cataract. It's a natural part of our aging process. Similar to everyone eventually gets wrinkles, we all get cataracts at some point. Most people get them usually by the time they're in their late 50s, early 60s, sometimes even into their 70s or 80s, but everyone gets them. And a cataract is an opacity in the lens of the eye. Before I was mentioning that the lens helps us to focus. Well, the lens is clear when we're young, it's transparent, but as we get older, proteins begin to build up in the lens and it begins to become opacified. And initially it has a yellowish color and eventually it becomes darker yellow and perhaps even orange or brown. And it prevents light from getting in. So it degrades vision because enough light is not getting into the eye, into the camera of our visual system. So in order for prevention of cataract, it's really important to have antioxidants. And the antioxidants that studies have shown that are important include vitamin C and vitamin A and vitamin E. So be sure to have plenty of these in your diet. Also, UV protection is important for prevention of cataract. I have a lot of patients ask me about drops. I know that there are some drops on the market which claim to help to dissolve cataracts or prevent cataracts. What I will say is that some of these drops have an ingredient called L-carnosine. There has really been no clinical study to prove that they work, these drops. You know, if there is a drop that's developed for prevention of cataract, whoever develops that will be a billionaire many times over because everyone will be using it because we're all going to get cataracts eventually. So, so far the drops on the market have not been proven to be effective. There was also an ingredient or a compound called lanosterol, which was shown to prevent cataracts in animals. So, for example, rabbits and dogs, this compound was given as a drop and it helped to dissolve cataracts in those animals. But when they tried to do human studies using lanosterol, it really did not have the same benefit. So it didn't work in humans. So there's some other, biochemical processes going on in human cataracts that are not amenable to lanosterol. So I do hope that probably within the next 5 to 10 years, there will be something available that can help dissolve cataracts naturally rather than to have cataract surgery, which is the current standard treatment for when the cataract becomes visually significant.
I tell you, what the improvements in cataract surgery are just phenomenal. My mom had it, and I was just so impressed how she was in and out within very quick time, and the recovery time was very quick. So I was very impressed. Gone are the day. I mean, I don't know how they did it in the old days. That must have been very agonizing.
Yeah. So, I mean, cataract surgery dates back to ancient times, and it was back then they used to use a procedure called couching. And this is a little interesting history. They would just take a stick, a wooden stick, and they'd sharpen the end and sterilize it under some fire. And then they would just poke it into the eye and push the cataract back into the back of the eye, let it fall back, and basically clear up the visual axis. But what that would do is it would create tremendous amounts of inflammation in the eye. And sometimes, yes, people may be able to see, would be able to see a little bit more light, but they would have a lot of inflammation in the eye. But over the years, particularly in the past few decades, the scientific advancements that allow for cataract surgery to be done the way it is done today are truly miraculous. I mean, the technology we use is, you know, it's mind-boggling, this technology that we have, that we currently remove cataracts using ultrasound energy, and in some cases laser as well. We remove the cataract, and then we replace the lens with an implant that helps us see, help to focus for distance, and some implants also are designed to focus at distance, intermediate distance, for example, the computer, and up close so we can read. So it gives us more of a natural range of vision. So again, the technology is incredible. It's a very quick procedure. In most cases, it can be done under 15 minutes. Most people are in and out, just within an hour or two out of the facility. And it's a pretty quick recovery time. And the outcomes are wonderful, which is great. And both of my parents had cataract surgery recently, and they're doing fantastic. So it's very effective, but wouldn't it be nice to also have a natural way to treat this? So I really look forward to someday having you know, being able to tell patients, well, take this drop and this is going to help you prevent your cataract or dissolve your cataract. So I'm looking forward to that in the future.
Well, maybe they need to, I mean, there are other drops, though, that like have been around for a very long time that have been used at least since the turn of the century, like cineraria drops. And you mentioned carnitine, but there's actually one that there's carnosine, and then there's superoxide dismutase drops. And I have slowed down cataracts, though, doctor. You know, I've been practicing about 30 mm-hmm. years, so I have slowed them down considerably, but I haven't really totally reversed them. So that we're looking for that magic bullet
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think perhaps some of these natural ingredients, some of the herbs, and there's also a homeopathic ingredient called eyebright that's also been used. So yeah. Again, another herb for, you know, it's possible that these herbs provide an antioxidant, you know, kind of a benefit to prevent progression. But in terms of dissolving a cataract that's already formed, to my knowledge, there's nothing yet in humans.
No, well, that's almost like, that's like a piece of plexiglass that you bend and bend and bend, and then it forms like a, you know, opacity through the middle. You know, you're not supposed to
exactly.
do that, because there's actually a struggle. It's like cooking an egg. I always tell patients it's kind of like you go from like a clear egg white when you first break the egg to actually cooking it. So there's so many conformational changes molecularly that, you know, you're not letting any light through. I don't think there's really any way to fix that besides replacing it, though, you know, because of those things. Although I do have to say that blood sugar problems, there's, I remember we learned about the sorbitol pathway in the eye, where if the blood sugar is really high all the time and there's a lot of those glycation products, the sorbitol pathway engages and you end up with a lot of sorbitol in the lens, and that's a problem. I can't remember exactly the chemical pathway, but I know that's a big
problem. No, you're actually
correct. Right?
Yeah, it is the sorbitol pathway. So, you know, glycolysis shifts over, and then these molecules, these various different sugar compounds, cannot be metabolized properly by the eye, and so they accumulate in the lens. They cause cataracts in patients with, you know, elevated sugars, diabetics, and then they also cause changes in the retina. So they cause these glycosylation changes in the blood vessels of the retina. So basically forms of advanced glycation end products, or AGEs, accumulate, and then they attach to the endothelial surface of our capillaries in our retina, and then they cause these very fine, delicate capillaries to begin to leak blood and fluid. So, you know, as mentioning leaky eye syndrome before, when it came to macular degeneration, well, diabetic retinopathy is another form of leaky eye syndrome. And once these blood vessels leak fluid and blood, they cause vision loss, and people can have really devastating vision loss from having elevated levels of blood sugar, with chronically elevated levels of blood sugar. Now, in the early stages of diabetic retinopathy, it is reversible. All of these changes are reversible. But once it gets past a certain point, almost like a tipping point, we can't necessarily remove all of that, you know, the blood and the fluid and the proteins that have developed there, that have accumulated there, and people develop significant vision loss, and sometimes it's even irreversible. So the best, you know, piece of advice I have is, if you have diabetes, do your best to keep your hemoglobin A1C under in a good range, under good control.
Right. Well, it's such a miracle, our eyes. We're running out of time for this segment, and we want to know where folks could get in contact for you. I mean, it's been such a great, I know you're on Facebook and have a website and on Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. So I encourage people to reach out, ask questions. My website is probably the best way to get in touch with me. So you can message me through RudraniBannickMD.com. That's my full name, which is my website. I also offer telemedicine consults. So if anyone has an eye issue and they would like to get some more personal advice about what to do about it, I'm, you know, very happy to do that through telemedicine. And then my book is, you know, the release date was slightly delayed due to COVID. So it is scheduled to come out in the late summer, early fall. And so if you do message me through my website, you can pre-order my book. and I will get it to you as soon as it's out. So I look forward to interacting with more people via social media as well. So I do have two Facebook groups. One is called Envision Health. So I encourage you to join to learn more about eye health, natural ways to prevent and protect eye disease and protect your vision. And I also do a lot of migraine treatment. We didn't talk much about migraine today, but my other Facebook group is called Eye on Migraine. So I encourage people to join. And if you're on Instagram, I'm on Instagram as well at dr.ronniebannick.
Wow. Thanks so much for helping us keep our most precious assets, our vision, healthy. Dr. Bannick, have a great day, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our talk. Thank you.
And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can get more information about what we're doing at naturalnurse.com and drznaturally.com. Stay healthy, folks. Health is wealth. Bye-bye.